Hi, I'm Tara Lynn of Geek Saga Entertainment, here with my co-host Manny for the Geek Saga Show series, The Media That Made Us. This series focuses on media that the two of us consumed in our younger or maybe even just slightly younger years, media that helped shape our current interests and that we still love.
So I'm Manny, and for our 12th Media That Made Us episode, we're continuing our coverage of the reimagined Battlestar Galactica series and discussing the Daybreak arc, which includes BSG's Season 4 3-part season finale.
Yeah, I guess we're more concluding our coverage than continuing, but
yeah.
Before we get started, just a heads up that you can follow me and therefore all of the Geek Saga endeavors at A Geek Saga on Blue Sky, Facebook, Instagram, Threads, and YouTube.
And you can find me on Facebook and Instagram at Benissimo Art.
Just a couple other house cleaning items before we dig in. If you're watching this as a webcast on Facebook or YouTube, pretty please make sure to hit those like and or subscribe buttons. And if you're catching the audio only version on your favorite podcatcher, we could really use some more ratings, especially on Spotify and Apple Podcasts, and would super very much greatly appreciate it if you could take a moment to mark the Geek Saga podcast 5 stars wherever you're listening. Last but hopefully not least, we hope you'll check out the Geek Saga Entertainment Patreon. We have a lot of tiers, with just $3 per month getting you the most prevalent perk of early access to podcast episodes. And for $5 a month and up, you will get a secret patrons-only live stream as well. So check it out at patreon.com/geeksaga_entertainment.
Our format for this Media That Made Us series includes our top 5 moments that made it, basically our hot takes from the portion of the series we're covering, followed by any insights we've uncovered from rewatches and or being longtime fans. And while we're only covering the 3-part series finale in this episode, we had a tough time narrowing down these top moments, which we'll begin with the Galactica truly sticking the landing to kick off her final battle, or should it be the Galactica truly sticking her own ending?
Right? Jumping right up next to the Baystar and then ramming straight into it. Like chef's kiss, oh, yeah. Man. Really, really, really stuck that landing and that ending.
Yeah, the whole final battle scene, it was just really exciting. It was very much just like a last stand kind of battle. And then the fact that they just like ram a fucking hole into this fucking hive. I'm glad it wasn't like reinforced or anything like that. Maybe they had other Baystars crash into it by accident. They're like, hey, Jeff, we're going to have to, you know, put some more shielding on this thing, because now Galactica didn't care. They're just going to sandwich their way right through it.
I guess that there's a chance the Cylons who are with the people told them about a weak spot, but yeah. Also there was such a tiny area/window of space that they could jump into at all, that it seems very convenient that tiny little space they could jump into also happened to be right at the weak point. So, you know,
right at the weak point.
Yeah, I'm not complaining. I'm just stating the facts.
But it was cool. Like, that whole end scene was great, because all the gun battles and the way they're like kind of invading the entire hive or whatever, that was really cool. It was really nice to see all the original Cylons, which was cool. But I do have one complaint. I've noticed that with the past few seasons, probably after season 3, like the beginning of season 3, I noticed that the special effects kept getting worse and worse. And it's really noticeable in this episode with those Cylons. Like, I mean, it is really noticeable. So that was the only thing, you know, that I was like, But that was my only complaint probably about this part of the episode. But I'll never get tired of just watching those guns come out of Galactica and just shooting their firing like solution. Like, that never gets old to me, man. I loved it.
Yeah, I wonder if, I probably could have tried to look this up or maybe even ask Dean, but I do wonder if earlier in the show they were using more practical effects and later in the show they were trying for more like circa 2000, whatever it was, 7, 8, 9 CGI. And that was the difference in the quality. Because when you've got really great practical effects, but not so great CGI, that's when it really shines through in all the good ways. Honestly, the fact that the Galactica survived this at all and was able to jump away was such a shock, though. Her surviving the whole plowing into the Baystar alone seemed so improbable, nay, impossible. Also, why are all of these terms ramming, plowing into so hypersexualized? Yeah. Like, okay, yeah. No, really, yeah, no. I can't think of any terms that fit this scenario that aren't. So, like, anyway.
Yeah. I can just see the admiral in the CIC right now. What are we going to do? You know, he's like, we're going to penetrate her, but we're going to do it kind of quickly, you know, but we want to get her ready first, you know, and then we're just going to make our way in there. Like, it's like, wait a minute.
Hey, this is Battlestar Galactica, not a porn.
Yeah, exactly.
The battle was, I mean, really the highlight for me was seeing that moment where the Galactica jumps, like shows up right in the crux of the base star. And then they're like, yeah, do it, go. And they just ram into it. The rest of the battle is very, not rushed in a bad way, but just rushed in the sense of like, holy crap, one thing and another and another and another and another. You barely blink when like Racetrack dies. I totally forgotten that when she dies, her hand like hits the thing and sets off the nukes.
I will say this about that whole, any outside shot they had there, they used really good angles for everything because they made a point to show you how small the Galactica was next to that hive, and then the hive circling that singularity on top of it. You know, they did a really good job with these angles that made the Battlestar Galactica, because we're, you know, you look at the Galactica amongst the fleet, it looks like a monster. I mean, it's just huge. And this is one of those instances where it's like, dude, this thing just looks like a baby next to this thing. Really good use of angles.
I mean, the Cylon ship is a very good use of angles, let's be real.
Yeah, that's true. It's all, you know.
Okay, top woman number two. Let's all go to the lobby. Let's all go to the lobby. Let's all go to the lobby and have ourselves a prophecy. It doesn't fit all that well, but AKA, this is where I'm going to introduce Maester Manny to talk about the Opera House prophecy, quote unquote, fulfillment. The floor is yours.
Thank you. It's been a while since the ending of House of the Dragon season two, but the Maester's back now. We're going to take a step back into the ancient times of the mid-2000s, when I saw the episode that first showed the Opera House prophecy. I understood its meaning completely. It was very clear, running through me like a river, that was to be the first prophecy of the great Maester Manny that will be forever spoken about in the great halls of Maesters for all time. And the prophecy goes as such. Here we see a clash of two worlds. Okay, we see the president of humanity, Laura Roslin, who is stuck in the old ways, and the other is Boomer, or Athena, I guess, later, or whatever. But Boomer, right? She wishes to keep her child from harm, and she does not trust her child's fate in the hands of humanity. And as they're now frantically running through the lobby of sorts, near the concession stand, as they chase Caprica and Gaius, who are now walking together with Hera in their arms, the child of Boomer the Cylon and Hela the Gentle. As the Cylon mother of the child and the leader of humanity run to dictate what the shape of the future will be like, but they are both mistaken, for Gaius and Caprica showed up to the opera early and will be able to be seated. The doors close before Laura and Boomer can get to Hera. They're too late. This clearly means that all the ways of old are to die. Only three will survive to usher in the new Cylon human civilization. The old will die in their old ways, as the prediction went. There will be a final battle, and in the heat of that battle, Caprica and Gaius will flee with Hera in the midst of the chaos. And as they flee, they see both fleets getting destroyed. We see Boomer and Laura both coming to the understanding that at least Hera got out alive. A white light fills the screen as both fleets annihilate each other. We then see Hera drawing more notes. Gaius, being a scientist, puts two and two together and realizes that she's actually writing coordinates. They jump to the location and they find this Earth. From there, they will build a new civilization. They'll probably be locals, so they'll have babies and stuff. That was the prophecy that was written by Maester Manny. And in the case of that prediction, it turned out to be fucking false. Terribly false. Okay? That's not what happened at all. That's not what happened at all. The prophecy of the Opera House was not a prophecy. It was more like a premonition. Okay? There was no real thing that came out of it. It was literally a prophecy of, oh, we're going to chase these people down the hall and wind up in the same place anyway. There was no consequence to that prophecy. In my eyes, it was literally pointless. It was completely pointless. Maybe it's because I was like raised Christian. So, you know, like you read these things in it and they're so cryptic and it's like, wait, but what could it mean? What could it be this? But it's like, dude, that's like me. Like, okay, I had a dream that I was walking down this hallway and then I opened the door and there was like a salad waiting for me. And then the next morning I'm having this epiphany where it's like, wait a minute, I'm in my hallway and there's a salad waiting for me. Like there's no consequence to it. It's just like, it's like a premonition, you know, we're just using a different backdrop.
Yeah. And they do call it a prophecy too. At least in everything I've read. And I think you're right. It's more of a premonition. And almost when it happens, it's more deja vu for Roslin than anything else. And I guess what it does is it makes her do the thing that saves. It does lead to a positive, I guess, conclusion, which is a good thing. And maybe she wouldn't have gone through with it if she hadn't had that dream, that premonition, whatever. But yeah, it's not a prophecy. It wasn't a prophecy, even though they've called it that. And
they built it up for a while. And that's how I came up with my theory of it. I was like, dude, this is clear what's going to happen. These people are chasing each other for this kid, and no one's going to get the kid except for Gaius and Caprica. And it made a lot of sense because Caprica at this point was way more compassionate. She was more of like a person. And Gaius was very much changed. You know, he was a little bit of a religious nut, sure, but he wasn't really that religious nut. He was just more like calm-minded. He was everything. And I was like, oh, yeah, these are the perfect people to like usher in the new civilization now, because these people are not about the old anymore. They've let go of their old ways and they're trying to move forward.
Well, and also, I mean, even in that moment when Hera runs away, Hilo is gravely injured. And to be fair, you don't see him again until the end when you see him like limping around or whatever. And so, you know, obviously he survives. Thank God. And I guess that was a like a point of contention where they were talking about killing him off. And Tom Pennicott was like, listen, I feel like this is, and I'm paraphrasing, but this is an interview that I read. He was kind of like, that would just be death for death's sake. Like, well, we have to kill off more major characters in the finale. Or whatever. And I agree. I'm glad they didn't kill him, obviously. But yeah, I mean, I think that in that moment, I think even watching it the first time, do you remember seeing that Hilo is like gravely injured and thinking like, okay, well, if Hilo's gravely injured, who knows what Athena's going to do or what's going to happen to Athena? And therefore maybe Baltar and Caprica 6 will end up with Hera.
I was really hoping, because when I saw that scene, so Hilo gets shot, I'm like, here it comes. The Galactica screwed. They're not getting out of here. The Hive, they're going to fall into that singularity. Everyone's dead. Gaius and Caprica. I was so like, I would have put money down on my own. That's exactly what's going to happen, because that's what the prophecy told me. And that's what it was building up to. And that's why I hate fucking prophecies.
Listen, it could have been worse. They could have literally never revisited that whole Opera House thing ever again. True. I would not have expected this show to do that, right?
Yeah.
They weren't Game of Thrones.
But I think they chickened out in the end. I honestly think that they were wanting to do other things, and I really feel like they just chickened out in the end. And they were like, we need to play it safe and give it a reasonable ending. They wanted to end it like on a good note, where everybody has a happy ending almost.
That's not a bad thing. And I say that as somebody who does actually tend to usually prefer things to have more like ambiguous or not entirely happy endings, just because I think that's more like realistic. And I mean, at the same time, I enjoy a good happy ending for sure. Mm-hmm. But this isn't the type of show that you necessarily expect to have one of those. I'm not mad that it did have as positive of an ending as it did, and that we didn't lose some of these beloved characters.
I agree with that.
Hera didn't lose her parents or even one of her parents and have to be raised. And like, you're right, Baltar and Caprica are very different than they were at the beginning. But you still don't want this little kid, like, she should be raised by her parents who love each other and love her. And
it was a good ending, and I don't feel like my ending would have been better. It's just that the way the show was building, it was building with this point of like destiny is what it was. So the fact that they had this Opera House prophecy, I was like, well, this has to mean something, right? Because everything in the show, the song, everything's building up to something. And here comes this prophecy and it's coming true now. So now it's like, oh, something's going to happen. And it was just like, hey, guys, you locked the door in front of us. Can you let us in? Oh, yeah. Sorry about that. Here, come on in.
This is where we need Patrick here with Patrick's prophecies to talk to us about how not all prophecies should come true and everything. So
I'm going to agree with.
But
I just feel just the way it was built up. It was built up like it was something really important. And in the end, it was nothing important. You just predicted that you'd be running down the same hallway chasing after the same people. That's it.
Yeah. Yeah. Well, before we go on to the next top moment, just to reveal, I was hemming and hawing about what I actually said, which was like, let's all go to the lobby. But the other option was, let's all go to the CSE. Let's all go to the CSE. So,
but I fucked it up because I put concession stand down here that I just totally stumbled over when I said it. So that's what
I'm doing. Listen, we're doing it live. We're doing it live.
Fuck it. Doing it live.
Oh gosh. All right. Next up.
Oh man. All right. Deal is struck until Tori is struck dead. That is. That's right. The final five were going to give resurrection to Cavill's faction, but Chief went on and ruined it. For good reason.
Yeah. I was gonna say, like, to be fair, he had his reasons. The whole thing where they had to share literally everything about themselves with each other and everything they've ever done, and you can see how nervous Tori is, for fuck's sake. Like, yeah, you should be, girl. And she's like trying to insist they've all done bad things. And you gotta wonder if maybe she'd confessed before they started the process, whether things would have gone differently. I suppose honestly, that's kind of neither here nor there, because she doesn't confess. And it's a big what if anyway. And as soon as Chief sees what she did to Callie, he breaks the connection to just straight up snap her neck.
Yeah, just crush her neck. Just crush her neck and just tossed her out like a piece of trash.
Yeah.
I mean, did you see how violent that throw was, you know, like after he killed her? Just like, wow, Chief. But look, I mean, can we talk about the Chief's anger issues, though? He really seems to have a problem with it, you know? Yeah. However, in this instance, I'll give it a pass. Tori had it coming. It was well-deserved. But Jesus, how fucking aggressive was that? It was hardcore, but like a little too hardcore. I was like, bro.
The look on his face was scary.
It was straight up fucking scary. So, but I'm glad it happened, because I thought it was really stupid to like give Cavill's fractions resurrection to begin with. Mm-hmm. We all know who Cavill's character is. Do you think for a second that he's going to like just let it go and be like, okay, great. He's going to come back again. Mm-hmm. And then he's like, well, now I know where they are. So I'm just going to nuke them. And then we'll keep the planet for ourselves, because he's, you know, he's got this weird God complex. So no, it was a terrible fucking idea to begin with.
Yeah. I can't foresee how that ever would have worked out. So I'm glad that they did something to negate it happening. But I also agree about Chief's anger issues. Again, this is not the first time he's been violent with a woman. Specifically too. Granted, the Callie thing that happened way earlier in the series wasn't quite the same, because to be fair, he did not actually know what he was doing at that time, but still. And also, yes, Tori did a fucking terrible thing, but Callie was on the cusp of committing a murder-suicide that involved Nikki, who at the time Chief still believed was his son. Though honestly, now that I'm saying that, shit, like Callie knew Nikki wasn't Chief, so why did she have him with her at all?
Yeah, I don't know.
Like, I know this is likely a retcon issue, but now that I'm thinking about it, like, why did you have the kid, leave him with his real dad?
His real dad, hot dog.
Yeah.
Our favorite hot dog.
Hot dog's doing great raising that kid, carrying him around, picking up the pictures of the people from the memorial wall that haven't been claimed yet.
Exactly. He's not fighting with the chief for like custody. Chief is just like, oh, whatever. It's your kid. Take him. Get him out of here.
Yeah. You know, yeah. Like, literally, they land on a planet and Chief is like, I'm going to go find the most remote place that exists.
Yeah.
Fuck all y'all, including the child. So honestly, listen, props to hot dog.
You know, you got to give it to my boy Hot Dog. He's at least living his best life, the best life he possibly could live on the Galactica there, and making babies. That's cool, man. Proud of you, Hot Dog. Proud of you.
Moving on to top moment number 4, the Starbuck formula, aka the formula to finding a truly habitable planet. Starbuck plus song equals New Earth.
I really did enjoy that the song had like more meaning. It didn't just like bring them in. They heard it. And I thought at first, well, okay, the song was just being played in their head so they can all find each other. But no, it's literally playing the coordinates to where they're going to wind up. So I thought it was cool. I don't know. It was just a destiny moment, like for all of them. Like, what was this song? Why is everyone hearing it? You know, I guess it's like God humming it in their head so they can find their way home. Honestly, I really liked it. I felt like they've done some really wacky things towards the end of the series, but this to me like really worked. Even though this wasn't like a prophecy thing, this was certainly like a destiny thing, and it was played way better than the fucking opera house bullshit. Honestly, I loved it. And when she's like entering the like coordinates and it's doing all these flashbacks and stuff of, you know, Kara Thrace and how everything is kind of coming together, I was like, dude, destiny moment. This is fantastic. I loved it. Fantastic.
And listen, I go back to our previous episode, the Arc of Despair episode, where we talked about what Starbuck might be and how she could possibly have been half Cylon. And Hera gave Starbuck specifically the picture that included the notes for the song that Starbuck then assigned numbers and then used those numbers to jump them to a habitable planet. Hello?
Yep.
Angel, my ass. At best in my head, I say she is a half Cylon and that she is like everybody's head Starbuck. Baltar had head 6. She is everybody's head Starbuck.
Yeah.
Listen, I don't know the details. I don't know how it really happened in the end. Like you said, there's so much left but I'm not hating on it. I'm just saying. And yeah, you're right. The flashbacks while she's plugging in the numbers, and also it's building up. And of course, now we know, but the first time you watch it, they sort of anxiety of like, what the fuck is gonna happen? Yeah. On top of that, before they even see Yarth,
Yeah.
Before they even see Earth over here, that is the crack that breaks the mothership's back.
Yep. That was it. It was done. And that scene, it was like an extended scene of watching the Galactica just twist around like a rag, you know, like it was so wild. Laura Rosen's like, where have you taken us? And it just focuses on Kara's face. And I remember watching this with a group of people. And the second the shot changed and you saw the Galactica flying over a moon, like we all knew what it was at this point. And everyone stood up and yelled and they were like, yeah.
Very Independence Day shot there, BT Dubs.
Yes, very Independence Day shot. It was
Independence Day did wonderful. Come out before this, so just saying.
Yes.
That's why it's an Independence Day shot.
It was fantastic.
So good. And of course it was Starbucks.
It was important.
Starbucks plus All Along the Watchtower equals ER. Yep. We're moving through these pretty quick, but we do have a lot of
insights
to talk about. So what's our last top moment, Manny?
Wrapping up all these stories and putting a pretty little bow on top. Well, sort of.
There are definitely like some big hopes here that I guess thankfully pay off, or at least have paid off as far as we can see through the very end scene of the series. We'll get to that in a bit. But first, so the people, the humans and the sixes, eights and twos, they're going to spread out across the land and trash their tech to live like and with the locals. Real big assumption, by the way, that even without the tech, the locals won't be like, what the fuck are y'all wearing? Why are you guys so loud all of the time? Leave us the hell alone.
Yeah.
Okay, they don't have guns and computers and shit, but like Caprica just walks up in her red dress.
Exactly.
She doesn't. They're all wearing the most normal clothes they could possibly wear, but even like their BDUs and shit are so futuristic compared to like loincloths. I can't remember if they show much about what the locals are wearing, but they don't even have language yet. So
I'm pretty sure they don't have shoes or anything like that, you know?
Yeah.
And you don't show up with these combat boots.
And then the Centurions are given their freedom and their freedom ride, the base ship, so that they can find their own destiny, all on the sheer hope that setting them free alone will break the cycle of violence. Listen, I applaud their positivity in this moment. I can't believe it still exists at all, but I do applaud it. It's like living in this world right now. I can't. I have zero positivity left in me most days, so.
They're like rolling a lot of dice at this point. This is just a group of people who are fucking tired and have accepted their fate regardless of what happens. They're like, you know what? I don't care anymore. Just whatever. Give them the base ship. Sure. Fine. Resurrection. You want a resurrection caval? Sure. Take it. You promise you'll leave us alone? Yeah. Okay, cool. Great.
All right, thankfully, him and his faction are gone. They're dead now.
Thank God. Yeah. He fucking deserved it.
The Centurions, at least as of where we are in the very last scene of the show, they seem to have stayed away. So, but fuck, for all we know, they gave the aliens from Independence Day their fucking tech and okay, I'm kidding. But and then of course Anders will pilot the Galactica and the rest of the Colonial fleet into the sun, which is probably the most final action of these three that we've just talked about, because those ships obviously aren't coming back from that. So
No. They're gone. The concept hits deep for me, you know, because as much as I enjoy tech, I have a lot of days where I want to grab all of my technology and throw it into the fucking sun and just live like normal people used to fucking live, because there's so much noise in it. I understand it. And even though like it seemed like the population was all of a sudden agreeing to it, at first it was like, and then I thought about it. And I probably when I'm older now, like I understand it more. So I'm like, yeah, I'd fucking do that too. I'd be like, yeah, sure. Get rid of all of it. You know, we can just start over. And with the Cylons taking off with the base star, that was just like a really classy ending for them. And the way it was even filmed, again, these last three episodes, they did a great job with angles. So you see the planet, you see the base star, then it shows all of them inside with their hands in the water, and it just kind of blinks away. And it's got the epic music, and because all the music in these last three episodes is really epic. It's really just good, and it's very well-rounded. It's not just like all the drumming stuff that we heard. So it's very orchestra, very beautiful. And I thought that was fucking great. And then my favorite scene, probably my favorite scene of the entire series, okay, of the entire series, is when Adama is getting on the Viper, right? He's on the deck and there's no one else there. He's clearly the last man on board aside from Anders. And he's getting on his ship and he flies. And as he's flying, he's like right next to the Galactica, you know, and you can see like how messed up and how like wrinkled the Galactica is from all the beating. And you see the words on it. And then the song kind of goes into its change as he changes his view and looks straight. That's the point where you're truly like he's saying goodbye to the Galactica at this point. And you see Earth, and then it jumps right into Anders' speech about like perfection. And you see the entire fleet and it's going off into the sun playing the original Battlestar Galactica theme. And it was just so fucking touching. And then the fact that you never see the Galactica get destroyed. You see it going towards the sun. We know it gets destroyed. Mm-hmm. But they never dishonor her by showing her getting destroyed. And I thought that that was just...
And we'll talk about the flashbacks some more in a bit, but I want to say Anders' flashbacks, they were the ones that honestly, like, they gave me the chills. They hit me the hardest.
Absolutely.
Like, I have feelings about some of the other ones, particularly Rosalind's. But yeah, Anders, the speech he was giving, like you said, that was the one flashback sequence where I think they did a perfect job with it and they timed it perfectly. And it was honestly a really, really good ending for a character who was kind of secondary for a long time.
It was a beautiful ending.
And was also the only one of the four, minus Ellen, but her last name is also Ty. Only one of the four who didn't have a T name. Just saying.
Exactly. Get out of here, Anders.
Oh my God, it's terrible.
You know who has a T in his name? Hot dog.
No, but it doesn't start anything, so...
No.
Oh, no, wait. His name is Samuel T. Anders, I'm pretty sure.
Oh, that's right. It is. So he has a T.
Oh, he does have a T. Sorry. Base hot dog comparison.
Look, he has T's in his name. It's just not like starting it, you know?
No, exactly. Exactly.
But again, the ending would not have been the same if it was hot dog sitting in that puddle of goo as opposed to Anders. Can you imagine if they did that? Can you imagine the flashbacks hot dog would be getting? Like, and what his words of wisdom are? He'd be like, oh man, this is cool. Hey guys, we made it. I feel great now. Hey, I hope everybody has a good time. Bye, guys. It would not have been as like epic. And I'm not making fun of Hot Dog. I love Hot Dog. I'm just saying his fucking personality is what I'm saying.
Oh, God. Okay. I think it's time to talk about insights. We're going to talk about insights we have gleaned from being longtime fans, but we're going to start with our Dean sites because this last Battlestar Galactica episode we're doing, I've been referring to any Easter eggs or bloopers. We haven't had a blooper in a long time other than we have talked about the failure to...
The launch bays, yep.
Yeah. But we haven't talked about bloopers really much in a while, but we are calling production and really deeper insights into the inner workings of the show as Dean sites because my partner Dean knows more about the series than I ever could. And he constantly points things out to me. I long ago lost track of what I knew before I knew him, blah, blah, blah. So the first Dean site is Manny.
More in the writers hemmed and hawed about what to do with the Galactica at the end. For instance, they considered burying it and showing it being dug up in the far future. And even before they decided the Colonials would get rid of all the technology, they talked about only torching the ships, a la Cortez burning his ships after reaching the New World. That, I think, would have been pretty cool. But it would have been cool to like see the Galactica getting dug up. But then it brings a whole new...
Yeah.
I feel like it changes. Because the thing is that I think the point of the show is that it ends in the real world, right? It ends where we're at right now. So by doing that, I feel like it's like, no, I like it better the way it ended. But I do like, I'm a big sucker for like the concept of like an ancient ship that's been found many years later and there's technology and all this kind of shit, you know? And then let's face it, if the locals today found that ship today, they would just use all of its information to create all kinds of shit. And then the cycle would happen all over again.
Yep. You know? Well, and also like the torching the ships a la Cortez, that's basically what they did. I mean, obviously Cortez and his men brought things to the New World that the New World did not have at the time. Yeah. So it's not entirely like a one-to-one comparison, but I think they took that concept and went a little extra with it. And I'm glad they did what they did. Second Dean site, the first draft of the script that spanned these three episodes is what it is on Amazon Prime. I think it's actually what it's also listed as on Google. But I feel like when it aired, it was Daybreak Part 1 was by itself, and then Daybreak 2 and 3 were together, from what I remember. But anyway, whatever. The first draft of the script that spanned these episodes was almost exactly what was shot. But there was one exception that was pretty big, at least in my opinion. That very first draft had Adama and Rosalind getting into the Raptor and flying off into space, never to be seen again. But Mary McDonnell reminded Moore that not only had she counted on having a death scene, but that Moore himself had promised her one. So that is, of course, the route they took. This actually flows right into my first personal insight. Hannah also kind of gives me a bit more to say about it. First of all, I can't believe they ever thought about not showing Rosalind die on screen.
Yeah.
I don't know that they show her take her absolute last breath on screen. The cutting and everything makes it like a jerk, but we all knew she was going to die for sure. Mm-hmm. And it was heartbreaking and powerful at the same time to see her basically right up to her very end. I can't imagine the show without her final moments. I really hate when people use the term frack in general conversation, but this is a BSG webcast, so I'm going to conclude this particular insight by saying frack cancer. And I knew I was going to choke up at this because I've got some personal stuff that has happened this week. So Manny, what's your first personal insight?
The more things change, the more they stay the same. It's a quote from a French critic, Jean-Baptiste Alphonse Carr. I probably completely mispronounced that, and I don't give a shit.
No, okay, you I'm got sorry. Jean-Baptiste Alphonse. That's right.
Okay. Okay. We have some of those names in Cuba, so, you know, I was familiar with it. And anyways, as I always keep bringing the show back to Deep Space Nine, because I think I've done that probably in almost every episode at some point, this quote was also used in the last episode of Star Trek Deep Space Nine. So I thought that was a nice little moment for me anyway. I'd lean on for the five people that watch Deep Space Nine. But
I'm sure there's tons of people that watch Deep Space Nine. I was just not one of them. Okay, so one thing I want to touch on a little bit is Head Six and Head Baltar, the real 150,000-year story. I liked how Caprica and Baltar were together in the final battle. Actually, let me do a random aside mini insight. Why did they have sickbay prep all of the triage stuff when they knew they were going to ram the Baystar? I never thought about that before, but I've also been watching The Pit on HBO, which is a show that takes place in an emergency room. And so they're always prepping triage and shit. And it's like, why would you put all those scalpels and shit on the tables if you knew you were going to be like crashing into
Ramming something? Maybe you should have done it after.
Have them contained in enclosed cases or something. Maybe they don't have those, but also like, why would you do all that knowing that it was all just going to fly everywhere? Anyway,
for God's sake, like take the wheels off of the fucking beds, you know?
Yes.
Like,
what happened there? Who did? I know Rosalind was part of that, but there were doctors there. Okay. There were doctors there. Not Cottle. Nope. Oh God. Actually, shit. I'm going into another mini insight. Can we talk about how Cottle offered to be part of the Hera rescue mission? And Adama was like, nah, man, you good.
Yeah.
We cannot lose another. We cannot lose basically our only doctor, I think, at this point, as far as we know. But I love that Cottle fucking offered, because of course he did, because we love Doc Cottle. Doc Cottle He's and hot dog. Fantastic. This is the Doc Cottle and hot dog stand webcast podcast.
And I really, hands down, dude. And I love how like Rosalind broke him in that scene when she's being all loving towards him. And he's just like, oh,
yep.
I don't know what to say. And she's like, don't say anything. Just light a cigarette and grumble something and just go. Like, you
know? Light a cigarette.
Yeah, exactly.
Okay. I've gotten off track. The original thing was Baltar and Caprica Six being together in the battle and Caprica Six saying, I'm proud of you. I never thought about it, but that's the one thing I needed to feel about you that I never had before. And then they like make out and stuff. And feeling proud of somebody you love is a very powerful thing. It's a very powerful emotion. The way I feel proud of like Dean, my stepkids, my sisters, like my nieces and nephews, my friends, hearing her say that and what comes after, it's not about them finally, oh, they're finally back together, guys. It's more just like, that's what she needed to get to that point. I don't know. It was nice. Then also funny that Head Six and Head Baltar are like, hey guys, stop. We're here. Yeah. We're proud of you too. We're here. We're not queer. At least, I mean, listen, honestly, I'm pretty sure. Well, first of all, absolutely. Neither one of them is perfectly straight. Sorry. But yeah, Head Six and Head Baltar showing up and just kind of, what's up?
Hey guys.
You can see him?
You can see him? Both of them or just one of them? What are you seeing both of them? Which one are you seeing? Which one am I seeing? You know? Mine looks like a hot dog.
We follow the head six and head Baltar through the end of the series. With Baltar's like very extra. Those sunglasses he was wearing were honestly like those went out in like 2003 or so.
Yeah.
But dude, the fashion in this show at the end, like in the beginning, it's like, okay, this is 2002, 2003-ish fashion, maybe in most cases. But by the end, it was like, oh, guys, come on. They're supposed to be in present day New York City. Those sunglasses are out. They've been out for like 5 years.
For a while. Exactly.
It was very, I don't know. I am interested in your thoughts on Baltar and Caprica in the far future and just them being like, I guess, the shepherds of the story in a way.
Yeah, they kind of are.
She's the one that's reading the mitochondrial Eve article, which is, But
again, it's like, you know, we never get a clear answer as to what they are to begin with. Is that Caprica and Baltar? Because in death, there's no time. So could it be that that is Gaius who died and he just kind of appeared to himself back in time or to Caprica to kind of guide them together? Is that what they are? Or are they just angels disguising themselves as Gaius and Caprica? It never quite tells
They're actually what they seraphs. Okay.
Seraphs.
They're wingless angels. They never got to appear in Battlestar 1980. So
no.
But to be honest, them being seraphs is actually kind of more believable than most other things. So I like a lot of other things other than them just being angels.
Yeah, no, I did too. But even to me, it's like, they could be angels. But again, if they would have just explained it, why did you help us this whole time? Oh, because we are you, right? Like you pass away eventually, and that's what we are. And we just wanted to come back and see you or whatever. There could have been an explanation to it. There wasn't. That's fine. The ambiguity, whatever. That's totally fine. I'm okay with that. If it was just seraphs and it was just angels or whatever, why did they embody the way these two people look? Why wasn't it their own look or something else?
This doesn't entirely apply. And I'm talking about a dream. So again, that's what I'm saying. This doesn't entirely apply. But my dog, Wendy, passed away in 2019. She had cancer. And in a lot of ways, it was a very sudden end. She seemed okay. I had taken her to the vet for some minor problems. One day she collapses. I have to spend like $8,000 in emergency surgeries and vet bills and whatnot. They tell me after the fact that they biopsied the tumors. It was cancerous, whatever. It had spread like a month after the surgery. She collapsed again and I had to let her go. It was a very fucking difficult time for me. Years later, I mean, I'm talking even like as recent as, I can't remember the last time exactly, but for sure within the last year, I still have dreams where my dog, Wendy, she shows up in my dreams and I know she's dead. Like, I know I'm seeing a ghost Wendy or an angel Wendy, but there are other people there. And I ask them, can you see her? Can you see her? And they can too. Yeah. The thing is, like, I always know she's going to go. And it's always, it's like happy and sad at the same time. Because like she's there with me in the dream and she's like playing and young and happy again and loving me and loving my friends and my family, whoever, because it's been different groups of people, but it's always people she knows. And I know she's going to go, but also all the people in the dream, they can also see her. I don't know if they understand that she's going to leave, that she's not, you know, she's not alive, but like there's a part of me that it's like, I know that this isn't a dream for them or anything, but there is a part of me having had these dreams now, which I had not when I first watched the series, that it seems like a, almost like a situation like that. Does that make sense at all? Like, or am I just elaborate?
No, it makes sense.
Again, it's not a one-to-one comparison, but
yeah.
Anyway, so what's your next insight?
Mine is less of an insight and just more of like a commentary about this arc altogether. It may sound weird after all the arcs that we've done, but I feel like this one was the most out of place out of everything because it really felt like its own contained miniseries. It had a definitive beginning and had a definitive ending, and anything in the middle they filled in with flashbacks. It starts off a new show and it like with the flashbacks and where they're at, it sets this kind of like finale tone where you just know, you know, like, okay, here it is. But it comes with just flashbacks after flashbacks after flashbacks. And I felt like a lot of the flashbacks should have taken place earlier in the series, because I feel like there was a lot of them that were very telling in particular the ones with Gaius. When you see what Gaius went through with his dad, it really made me feel bad for him, where I'm like, oh, no wonder he's like so arrogant. He's like, look at me, I'm better than everybody kind of person, because he was literally being belittled by his dad the entire time and was just like a piece of crap in his dad's eyes. No wonder he grew up to be like that. And I felt that that was a very strong part to understand about his character, and not to like forgive some of the stupid shit that he's done, but like, I get it, you know? And then it makes like a lot of sense where it's like, yeah, he's rebellious and he's like, you know, whatever the hell, but let's face it, he didn't want to sign that paper to execute those 200 people on the planet. He was sitting there with a gun to his head. He wasn't a bad person. He was just misguided. You know, he was just dumb. And you can see like, well, of course he was, because the guy was treated like crap by his fucking father. So he wanted to just be, I don't know. But the other flashbacks are like really cool too. It was cool with Laura Roslin that it kind of reveals her backstory, because it was, that one was heartbreaking, you know, because it's like the baby shower, then they leave, and then she gets woken up in the middle of the night. Her sisters died in a car wreck, and then
your whole family, sisters and
your whole family.
My God.
Yeah. It was like everybody. And then she kind of goes back to normal, not normal, but she's like kind of getting on with her life and sleeps with one of her students. Not that she was still a teacher, it was one of her past students.
He was a full on adult. Like, there's definitely
a full on adult.
It's definitely a May December thing, but he was a full on adult. So.
Exactly. So it was cool to like see those, and even the flashbacks with Kara and Lee, and to see how something almost happened between them and like all that kind of stuff. Yeah. But I thought it was really fucking cool. You know, like, wow, this is like really good stuff. I overall enjoyed it. It's just that it was jarring. It just threw the pace of the entire show off, because it made me feel for a second like I was watching a different television show when they were doing these like flashbacks. Again, none of them were bad. They were all good. They did great for their characters. But I'm like, why are you doing this at the very end? It almost seems like it's almost like a filler, because let's face it, there isn't much that needs to happen in these next three episodes. Kill the Cylons, go to Earth, throw the stuff away, and we're done, you know? So they could have done that in one episode. But I liked it. It was cool to see like Caprica, like before the fall and all that kind of stuff, and the way life was, and it wasn't much different than what we do today. Things like that. Like I said, it wasn't bad. It was just different. I just felt like it was off, like slightly skewed watching these three episodes.
This is something I actually read a bunch about after watching these episodes and in preparation for this webcast. I guess more in the writers knew that the network was going to push back on the length of the series finale episode, whatever. And they also knew that the first thing the network would suggest to cut would be the flashbacks, which is what happened. But more and the writers really, really wanted to keep them no matter what, because they wanted to show the characters how they began in simpler times, et cetera, et cetera. But I agree with you. Like, personally, I feel like, why didn't they spread these out throughout season four, or even just throughout the second half of season four, versus cramming them all in at the end? Again, I'm with you. I don't hate them or anything at all, not by any stretch of the imagination, but they did leave the pacing feeling off, especially, especially like if we're going to look at this as it is on Amazon Prime, which is three separate episodes. Daybreak Part One, especially, is
very off.
It's very off. But you're right. I like what we saw. I just wish it had been not all shoved into the finale. As for Baltar and Caprica 6, I think they meant to show a deeper connection between those two characters with the flashbacks, but I'm not quite sure they succeeded. I think the thing with Baltar's dad, and even the subsequent conversation where Baltar offers to show Caprica the defense mainframe or whatever, made Baltar look worse, but Caprica look better. Maybe the things I've read didn't communicate that properly, but that's how it felt to me. Baltar, yes, his dad is being a dick, but also we don't know what his dad has been through. We don't know what for all we know, he has dementia. And
that is true.
People with dementia and people at the end of their life, they can be really mean and really paranoid. This is not because they are actually bad people at all. It's because their mental faculties have just, they're not there. I don't know that that's entirely what they were trying to, I think they were, you're right, trying to show that Baltar's dad was like sort of abusive or whatever. But at the same time, some of that is like a difference in, his dad was raised as a farmer, as we all know. And also we get that scene at the very end where actual Baltar on Earth, he breaks down remembering, I know how to farm. And that was actually really, really nice.
beautifully acted. It felt so real. And I think that James Callis is a great actor, but he really brought his fucking triple A game to these last episodes. I mean, he really fucking brought it. There's no problems with his acting. His acting was perfect from start to finish of the series, but I feel like in these last episodes,
he fucking
brought it.
But yeah, I mean, I do think that those flashbacks made him look worse and they made Caprica look better. And whether or not that was something they intended, part of me has to imagine they did, even though I didn't necessarily see any explanation or wording about that, because making Caprica look better makes the Cylons look like it gives her that extra humanity. I mean, she didn't, I don't know. I didn't feel from those flashbacks like she found Baltar's father a better place only because she wanted in on the mainframe or whatever. I felt like she did that because she saw that they were both Baltar and his dad were miserable and he was losing nurses because his dad was a mean old man. And she was like, well, I found a place where he won't feel that way. Maybe he'll be nicer because he's in a place where he's happier. And I don't know. I guess I could be wrong, but I've always felt that that was more out of, I didn't feel like she was trying to, because Baltar didn't even like his father. How much is that really going to affect him? And even when he's like, well, I guess I'll show you the defense mainframe now. And he's like, the things men do for love. It all felt very like, the things men do for love. Almost still felt like he was being the fake one and she was the one who was being real. So not entirely against how that turned out.
Yeah, I agree.
Gosh, I mean, I can't believe we've reached the end of this series. Now that we are at the end, I don't know, let's give some general conclusions about how we felt rewatching. And talk to me about, has covering this on the webcast made you feel differently about things, including hot dog?
Yeah, including hot dog. I found a new love for hot dog. There was things that I was more critical about this time than I was the first time that I saw it. And not in the sense of special effects or the way it was, but the characters in Gaeta, right? Like Gaeta, like I liked what had happened to him and I was like, wow, it's cool. And yeah, it sucks. It went down. But now watching it, I'm just like, man, fuck you, dude. How are you going to do shit like that? I was not like as forgiving with him this time around than I was the first time.
Which is funny because I think I was more forgiving this time.
Really?
Yeah. Not entirely forgiving, but a little bit. Maybe not forgiving, more understanding.
Yeah, I would say it was probably a little more critical about some of the people to where I was just like, dude, you need to chill out. With Hilo, you know, there was times that he aggravated me because I'm like, dude, can you stop being a goddamn saint for just 5 fucking minutes so we can like actually get shit done?
He never
gave in. And even with shit with like Anders and Starbuck, where it was like, Anders, man, like, what are you doing? Why are you still chasing this chick? She treats you like shit all the fucking time. But back then it was like, yeah, Starbuck's fucking cool. And I still love Starbuck. Don't get me wrong. But at them as a couple, I'm like, bro, he would have been, look, Anders and Hilo would have been my best friends. Like if they were real people and I was on the Galactica.
Starbuck did not deserve Anders. You know? Okay.
No, like not at all. No, not at all. And it's like, dude, why are you torturing yourself with this bullshit? So yeah, there was things like that. But when it comes to like some of the main characters, like the president or the admiral, I really liked the admiral's story just from start to finish. He's easily my favorite character throughout the entire series. And I loved his flashback in the last episode when they're putting like the fucking lie detector test on and he's just like, get this crap off me.
Fuck,
you know,
this
like,
shit.
He's like, fuck this, man. You know,
I ain't going corporate.
Yeah. He's like, I'd rather spend my fucking days in a fucking broken down old ship than have someone question my word. And when he says it, he's like looking him dead in the eyes. And it's just like classic Edward James Olmos, baby. Classic. The poor special effects was something I noticed this time around that I didn't notice last time, but it was had more to do with like the Cylons and some other like weird stuff. But I felt like their ships were pretty much on point from start to finish. So it was like little things, but I still felt like the same way about it. This is still one of the greatest shows that I think ever
hit
the television. Like from start to finish, it was perfect. Even now, I certainly appreciated the ending more now than I did back then. Back then, it was more jarring because it was just like, what is the fact that they find Earth wasn't the problem. It was like the angels and then Kara and like all this stuff was a little more jarring back then. But then now kind of walking into it and knowing it was like cool. And it was less disappointing because I already knew what the Opera House scene was. So I was like, OK, I can't be disappointed at the outcome because I know what it is now.
Yeah, I think that I was more forgiving of some things. Maybe not more understanding of some things, Gaeta, Zarek at the end, for sure. I was more understanding and looking at his actions in a different way. Not saying that they were right necessarily, but I think I was actually, I don't know, I don't think this changed the way I looked at things a ton other than that. Like, I think I was more forgiving or more understanding of things. I did get to air my grievances about Callie a lot, which, like, I don't know if it's an unpopular opinion that Callie is awful. And I don't like saying it because I don't want it to sound like I don't like Callie just because, you know, she's, I don't even know. I just don't. I think the Nexium thing definitely made that worse, actually.
It certainly tainted it.
Real life shit.
Yeah, no, it certainly tainted it because the first go around, I loved Callie. And when Callie died, it was like, it was a heartbreak for me because I loved her. I was like, but I love Callie. Yeah. And this time around, I'm just like, oof, this is weird.
I definitely found a new appreciation for Hot Dog.
Yes, yeah, exactly. I think we will all fans will eventually come to know Hot Dog and they'll appreciate him for what he is, what he should have been, one of the final five.
if they listen to our podcast, our webcast, maybe they will.
Yeah, there you go.
Listen to us. Hot Dog is the real savior of the story.
Exactly, dude.
I've always really loved Starbuck a lot. And I think that the first time, not my last rewatch, but let's say like my second to last, not my previous rewatch, maybe the one before that, I was watching it with a significant other at the time. And he ended up not finishing the series because of the Starbuck and Lee and them cheating on their spouses. Which I feel like, I don't know, man, you're watching a fucking TV show. That sort of like judgmental shit does not fly with me and when you're watching media of any sort. But watching it with that person, I do think I've got a little bit more of a negative opinion on the shit that Starbuck and Lee were doing. Not that I ever agreed with it, but I think watching it with somebody who is so like about it. But then watching it again now, it's still bad, right? They're still fucking cheaters, but watching it again with like a fresh mind of like having seen it the way I originally thought, having seen it that way, and now seeing it again from a critic's point of view, I guess, in a way. Like I don't want to call myself a critic. Yes, we have talked some shit, but we're not critics of this show in the sense that we're like, oh yeah, fuck this show, we're never watching it again. Like, absolutely, exactly. Give me a few years, maybe less, I'll watch this whole show all over again. And that's, I definitely had some different thoughts about Starbuck's character and everything. This is also the first time I think I really went back and looked at the blog entry that I wrote that we talked about in our last episode about all the theories about who or what she was. Getting extra insights from Dean has been really nice. More just because he's like studied the show inside and out. Getting some more insights from him has been interesting. I also think I thought, especially in these last three episodes, I thought a lot more about Baltar and Six than I ever had in the past. Like in the past, I was kind of like, ugh, whatever. Baltar's been doing his own thing. Six was with Ty and like pregnant with his baby for a while. Yep. As it is, the reason the show was obviously worthy of media that made us, and I continue to feel just this immense like love and appreciation for the show, is because how many shows can you say are just this good? Even with the flaws, even with the anything.
Yep.
How many shows can you? It's still one of my top five shows. Always will be. I literally cannot imagine it not being. 5 out of 5, 10 out of 10. Or what do we, no, we usually rate 10 out of 10 Zach Morris's, right? So we never gave the media that made us feel. What would it be named? I don't want to go with something as base as Stars. Hot dogs.
There you go. It's got to be Hot Dogs.
9.75 out of 10 Hot Dogs.
I'll give this one a 10 out of 10 Hot Dogs just because of the way it made me feel when I first watched it. I can look at it now and I can like tear it apart, but this was the only show that brought buzz amongst people who I didn't normally talk to at all. And like I made friends from it because it was always like, dude, did you watch last week's episode? Like, what do you think is going to happen next? And every episode we watched, it was just so memorable and like amazing. And it's like I watched it with this cousin of mine who passed away about 7 or 8 years ago, and he was young, and we brought him in to like watch it, and he loved it, and he became part of our group that watched it, and we were just always so exciting. And like, you can watch a bad show that's maybe a 6 out of 10, but when you watch it with a group of people and you feel the excitement of everybody getting into it and everybody doing it, It's like the Rocky Horror Picture Show is not a masterpiece within itself. It's an interesting movie for sure.
Yeah.
But what makes it fun is the group participation. It's everything that kind of
I was in the musical at one point and was the most fun fucking thing I've ever done. Well, it was one of the most fun shows I've ever done.
So I guess when I'm rating the show, I'm rating more of the experience than anything else. And hands down, 10 out of 10. It was a fantastic experience. Mm-hmm. And it spanned such a huge change in my life, because when the show started, I was a very different person than when the show ended. So when you see Daybreak and you see these people and how their life changed, it's like you grew up together almost.
Yeah.
So it was cool. 10 out of 10, man. Gotta give it to
you. I didn't quite have that because I started watching it not long before the final season came out. So watching it live wasn't a thing I really experienced. Although, like, I had friends who watched it live who I would visit in Florida, in Orlando, when I was still like working seasonally for Disney. Mm-hmm. And they would like, oh, we're watching Battlestar live tonight. You sticking around? And I'm like, I haven't watched the show. And also, like, I'm going out with my friends because I'm here for like a week or whatever. And now I regret that because I feel like I would have had some of those experiences, although I would have kind of been jumping in like mid show or whatever. As much as we've picked things apart here and there, I don't want to say like, oh, we have zero complaints, but the complaints are, we're not complaining so much as we're just analyzing it.
Yeah, because I don't have any complaints about it.
Yeah,
you know, it was a great show, and the experience, like I said, it was just extremely memorable. That's why I give it 10 out of 10, hands down.
10 out of 10 hot dogs
to the galactic
beast. You do realize that throughout our media that made us, no matter what we're covering, we're always going to rate things on scales of hot dogs.
Hot dogs now, exactly. 10 out of 10 hot dogs.
They serve those in movie theaters too. So.
Exactly. They should have thrown that in that fucking opera house prophecy, them getting fucking hot dogs. And then I would have been like, oh my God, the prophecy has something to do with hot dog. Hot dog is the final Cylon. Or maybe he's God. He's not even the Cylon. He's like, God is what it is.
No. Oh my God.
Nope.
Anything else before we close out?
It was one hell of a ride.
It's been a hell of a ride. We've been doing this almost a year now. Our first episode was, I'd say, late May of last year. Yeah, almost a year. Our next series won't be that long. Get into that in a second. As we close out this episode, we just want to thank you for joining us for our 12th Media That Made Us show on the Battlestar Galactica Daybreak arc. We will be back on Wednesday, April 30th, to kick off our next Media That Made Us coverage on, drumroll please, the Lord of the Rings movies, you guys. We went back and forth about this. We have some really great ideas for future Media That Made Us series, episodes, whatever you want to call it. But we decided that next up, we want to do something a little bit shorter. So we will be talking about Return of the King, the extended edition. Because P.S., extended editions only, bitches.
Exactly. Only extended editions.
Yeah. Man. We'll have so much to talk about. I still can't believe, Manny, that you have not actually ever read The Lord of the Rings by J.R.R. Tolkien.
No, I read The Hobbit. And like, that was it, but I never.
We're going back to House of the Dragon era. We're going to Hot D Takes era. I've read and you have not. So.
I have not. I am the unsullied. So yes, I have not been ruined by the books. I didn't know what happened in the movies. When I was watching the movies, it was like watching it.
You better be careful. Time. We're going to get hated on for that.
Yeah, exactly. Oh man, I gotta watch out.
Keep a weather eye out for the next episode to be scheduled. But again, Wednesday, April 30th, we're gonna be talking about Return of the King, the Peter Jackson film, obviously. In the meantime, please do not forget to like, subscribe, or rate us 5 stars wherever you're watching or listening. And as always, please also consider supporting us by backing our Patreon at patreon.com/geeksaga_entertainment.